It's like, is the environment conducive for learning and the way that you think and the way that you thrive? And maybe that's where the attention needs to go, and less on fixing people to fit into an environment when we really question it isn't working for anyone. You know?
I absolutely love that. Imagine if the message that I had gotten as a child, because what I would get from parents, from teachers, and from doctors was, you're disruptive, you're impulsive, you talk too much, you have too much energy. And everything was like, that's bad, that's bad, that's bad. You need to be less like that. If you take this medicine, you're going to be calm. You're going to let people talk. You're not going to be disruptive. You're not going to do anything crazy. When in reality, when I realized as an adult, I'm like, oh my God, all these things that I was told for so many years that were, you know, negative and wrong with me are actually my strengths. Like I was able to channel all that excessive energy that I have, yes, and that passion and zest for life that may look disruptive in a traditional setting environment for what I do now. Like I love talking to people. I love expressing these things. All my creative ideas, I get to write about them. I get to talk for hours on podcasts. Like all these things that I was told that were wrong with me are actually my strengths. Imagine if that's the message that I would have gotten as a kid over and over again, you know?
If you're a mom with ADHD, navigating the ups and downs of life with a more highly sensitive nervous system, this is your place. Hi, I'm Melissa. In this space, I'm sharing with you the things I've personally learned along my journey as an educator, a parent, an advocate, and as an ADHDer myself. If you're ready to embrace your differences as the unique gifts that they are and start showing up for yourself in new ways that empower you, build self-confidence, and start shifting cycles so you can pass a new way down to your kids, you're in the right spot. I believe that when we get to the root of our symptoms and start healing from the inside out, we not only heal ourselves, but we heal our kids too. Let's talk about it. Hi, friends. Welcome to Reframing Neurodiversity. I'm your host, Melissa Jackson, and I'm here to tell you it's time to see neurodivergence for what it truly is, a gift that benefits us all. As a former teacher, mom to two neurodivergent kids, and as a neurodivergent person myself, I know it's possible to see your neurowiring in a new way. That's why I'm on a mission to reframe the way we view neurodivergence as a collective and to empower us as neurodivergent adults and parents with the language and tools to advocate for ourselves and our kids. Join me each week as my guests and I share our personal experiences paired with cutting-edge research, leaving you feeling seen, validated, and proud of the way your brain works. Ready to get started? Let's dive into today's episode. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Reframing Neurodiversity Podcast. I am your host, Melissa Jackson. And if you are tuning in today, you are in for a treat. We have a very special guest with us, Ana Lorena Fabrega, who is an entrepreneur, writer, chief evangelist at Synthesis, and most recently, the author of the amazing book, The Learning Game. Thank you so much for being here, Ana.
Oh, Melissa, thank you for that warm intro. I'm very excited to chat.
I have to tell you, I'm semi-obsessed with your book. As a former teacher myself, I feel like you are in my head, taking all the thoughts and feelings of all the years and just putting them so beautifully onto the page. I know for me, as an educator and as a neurodivergent person and parent to neurodivergent children, I have felt very disenchanted with the school system from a professional perspective, from a personal perspective. And I love how you just so succinctly break it down on like, here's why we're at, here's why we are where we are, and here's what needs to shift. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me from your perspective, why did you feel like you needed to exit the school system and speak out about necessary change?
Yeah. So very much like you, I was very passionate about working with children. I loved teaching. I loved learning from my students. But I became very worried when I started to notice a lot of inconsistencies within the system and the whole structure and the way that we've set up this environment that is quote unquote supposed to be conducive for teaching and learning. But in reality, I feel like it does pretty much the opposite of what we know about kids and how they develop and what they need in order to thrive and learn. And so when you look at kids are, and you know, everyone, we're all very, very different, right? right? We learn differently. We absorb content differently. We have different interests. We are curious about different things, and we mature at different rates and paces. And so starting with the fact that, you know, school sort of puts everyone into this path that it's the same. And even though, yes, there's some tweaks that you do here and there, the expectations are pretty much for one type of student. And so if you're not that kind of student, then succeeding in this environment is really, really difficult. And I started to see so many kids fall through the cracks and get mislabels or, you know, self-fulfilling prophecies that they're not good at this because that's what they've been told. And they've been put in all this remediation groups. And in reality, I was like, well, that's because we're really focusing on trying to fix all their weaknesses, right? Because they maybe don't really fit in this system, instead of really finding what are those things that they're really good at, and then doubling down on those strengths, right? And so I felt like so many kids were just, again, we were setting them up for failure, and it didn't feel right. And it happened, you know, I worked in different countries and in different kinds of schools. I myself went to 10 different schools growing up. And so it didn't really matter what kind of school, and I'm talking about traditional schools, right? Of course, you have a lot of alternative education schools, which we can talk about later, that are doing things differently and that are actually catered to the way that kids develop. And so I'm talking about the traditional ones. I just felt like it was really difficult to do the things that we're hired to do, right? Which is set up kids for success and sort of nurture that natural curiosity and desire to learn. It's very difficult in this environments that, again, go against everything we know about kids and how they learn. So it got to a point where I decided to exit the system and find alternative ways to how to create alternative learning experiences that kids actually want to be part of, and where we are, again, accentuating all those things that they're naturally good at, and then finding ways to help them with those that they're not necessarily great at, but in a way that's suitable for them and not making them feel bad about it, right? And not making them feel like they're in this treadmill, like falling through the cracks. And so I discovered the alternative education world, and it turns out that there are a lot of different paths and alternatives and things that work for every kid. It's just a matter about, you know, being open to this and more parents finding out what the alternatives are. Even if you can't pull your kid out of the system, because I know that's not the reality for many parents, there are things that you can as a parent do in order to sort of nourish all this other side that's not getting nourished in school. And so I became really passionate about that. I started writing about it, and a lot of these ideas got turned into my first book, which is The Learning Game. And I try to talk about this, right, to sort of empower parents and to realize that there's so much we can do to help our kids and to find the way that suits each and every kid that we have.
I love this. And you know, what really had stood out for me as a reader of this book was how much you're speaking to the neurodivergent experience, which I know you never say that word in the book, mm-hmm. but what I love about the way you frame this is it's really so equitable, because it's not about what your neurowiring in is, mm-hmm. it's about what is just good teaching for all students, because mm-hmm. what I know is that in the work that I do, what's good for neurodivergent students is good for all kids. And mm-hmm. so there's this missing piece of school that if you're kind of that lucky few that maybe it works for, great, but there's so many children who are feeling disengaged and like they're just going through the motions and, like you said, slipping through the cracks. But the system is so big that I think so often families feel like, what can we do? You know, it's like it's this uphill battle because the system has been put in place. So even teachers and parents are kind of limited. So I'm very curious your perspective on what are these alternatives that parents can do when they find themselves in these situations where the traditional setting just isn't working.
Yeah. So I think that the first step is, taking a step back and questioning, right? So when they tell you, you know, there's something wrong with your kid, or when you observe that, you know, your kid is not necessarily thriving in this environment that you have them on, or when they come home and they're not really excited to keep on learning, or they don't want to go back to school, or you ask them, you know, what are you learning? Tell me a little bit more. And it's pretty like short one-liners. And, you know, those are all kind of red flags that mean that something is going on and something's not working. And so the first step is sort of realizing that. The second step, I think, is sort of going back and questioning, like, why are we here? Like, how did we end up here? Because a lot of people with the best intentions, right, just blindly trust the education system. Why? Because it's been around for so long, because it's what, you know, we did as parents and maybe worked for us, or maybe it didn't, but we haven't quite stopped to reflect about our own school experience and if it could have been better, or if it actually was the optimal environment for us to thrive in. We rarely stop to sort of reflect in this, right, and question this. Mm-hmm. And so I think it starts by doing that, because once you start doing that, I mean, that's how it all started for me. I started asking, well, why are we doing this? Like, how did this start? Like, who decided that these are the subjects that we have to learn? Why do we have subjects? Is this the best way to introduce content and knowledge? Is this how learning sticks? How long does it take for kids? Like, how come after the test, a lot of kids forget the material? Like, what are we doing wrong? So I had all these questions. And when you start digging into the history of the education system and actually the data behind a lot of these practices that we've been carrying along for so many years, you start to realize that a lot of them are either very outdated or they just plainly never worked, and we just continue to blindly trust them. And so I think that by educating yourself and you know, unlearning, which is a word that I use a lot in my book, a lot of this unhelpful lessons that we learned in school is one of the first big steps, because that way you can actually help your kid at home unlearn a lot of this unhealthy habits that they're getting reinforced in school, right? And so in the book, I talk a lot about, you know, the soft skills that we, because we talk a lot about academics and academically, how's your kid doing academically, but what about all the soft skills that we actually know that they're going to need in order to thrive in this ever-changing future that we're living, right? And that they're heading themselves toward, right? Regardless of what they want to do, how old they are, you know, we're living in a world of constant change. So how do you prepare your kids for that? And when you start to realize those, you know, for example, how to get comfortable with failure, because failure is something that we know that will come our way one way or another, and we need to learn how to handle this, right? And how do you do that? Well, through constant practice. And if you look in a traditional school setting environment, kids rarely have time to practice failing constructively when the stakes are low, right? And without getting that like bad grade that, you know, makes them not want to take risks and not want to
pretty keep, punitive, you know, yeah.
Exactly. And so these are like the kind of soft skills that I often talk about that we need to be helping our kids with. And I think the schools are sort of doing the opposite, right? So as a parent, once you realize, you know, what those are, and again, I mentioned some of the ones that I think are the most important in my book, but you can sort of figure out which ones matter a lot to your family, then you can start to find ways to reinforce those things at home. And so it can mean, again, if you can't pull your kid out of school, which is fine, you can then start to find alternative things that you can sort of like plug in throughout the week. And, you know, learning communities, it can be either online or maybe something in your neighborhood or something that you find where kids actually get to experience what it's like working in teams. And I don't mean, you know, a lot of the teamwork that we see in school, I would argue that's not really teaching kids how to collaborate in this world that we live in, right? It's very much teacher planned. And, you know, there's one kid that sort of like takes the lead. And no, I mean, like really learning how to work collaboratively, when to lead, when to step back and listen, like what to do when things don't go your way. Or, you know, when you have a conflict with someone, how do you react to that? Like all these different things are things that we have to learn regardless of what we end up doing. And these are things that parents can really help with. And so modeling the right kind of behavior and attitude, and again, this all comes after realizing what those are from questioning, is super important, because what often I noticed as a teacher, and I'm sure you did too, was that these things that we were reinforcing at home, and then, you know, it didn't feel good, but I had to give this kid like, you know, this bad grade, when I actually deep inside felt like they knew the material, they were just maybe not good test takers. And then this kid goes home with the bad grade, and parents again are so conditioned and used to just believing everything that the school tells you. So they punish them again, or, you know, they're like, oh, you didn't get a good grade, and they make them feel bad about it. When in reality, as parents, we should be like more inquisitive and approach this with curiosity and say, okay, did they get a bad grade because they don't know the material? Is it a big deal? And if it is, then is there another way that they can showcase this? How come they didn't get this? Were they not interested? Were they? So it's like all about, again, asking questions and approaching everything through the lens of curiosity. And then seeing if this traditional school setting is really not working for your child, then there are other alternatives. For example, very popular one is Montessori, which I'm a big fan of, because I think that it's really a lot of the things that I talk about that are important, like student-centered and letting really the kid do a lot of their own teaching and learning, right? And we're sort of the facilitators and the guides, not the fountain of wisdom, right? Yes. We're not delivering the knowledge, right? Instead, we're sort of giving them projects and giving them problems. And as they need different content and different topics, they're going to be interested in it. So they're going to want to dig a little bit deeper. And that's when you introduce that. So learning through projects, I think, is huge. And I've seen how it really helps kids remember the material over time. And so if they're not doing that in school, then maybe you can find something that your kid is obsessed with at home and then give them all the materials and the resources and access to the right peers or the right people so that they can sort of take this productive interest somewhere else, right? And so I think it all boils down to you being the perfect enabler for your child. So instead of, again, school's already focusing on remediating all those weaknesses. So it's your job to then double down on their strengths. What is my kid obsessed with? Is it music? Okay, so what can I enroll them in that they're going to be able to get really good at this thing that they're already passionate about? And I'm going to be, you know, their perfect enabler and cheerleader and make them feel like they can take this somewhere, right? Because again, in school, they're telling them, this is how you're going to be successful. This is the path. This is what you need to do. Here are the careers, da-da-da. But what if your kid doesn't fit in that path, right? It's your job as a parent to help them pave that new path that's more suitable for them. And these are some like general things that I'm talking about. They're not quite like as tactical as practical, but in the book, as you probably know, I do give very specific things that you can do that go, again, in this realm of things that I'm talking about.
Yes, no, you definitely do. But what I love about what you're saying is it really does start with this shift in mindset as parents, right? Questioning the default, questioning these messages we've all been served about, here's the right way to do school. Here's the right way to learn. You know, when your child brings a spelling test home and they failed it, you punish them because that's bad. And it's like stepping back and really looking at, you speak about this in your book as well, like the goal of school, looking at it, what is the goal of school? And this system that we've developed was really based on a time and a period in history that isn't relevant to today, you know, so we don't have the same goals. We, you know, we're not looking to standardize everything and make everything, you know, everyone conform to this efficient way of being. It's the skills we need today are these more divergent thinking skills that are more creative and innovative and allow for opportunities to make mistakes and to learn from our mistakes. And the system we have today really makes failure something to run away from rather than seeing it as an opportunity to learn and grow and refine what we want to do and how we want to do it. And, oh, maybe that's not my thing, but this is my thing. And diving deeply into what we're interested in, that none of that is available to kids because it's based on the system that was developed during a time that isn't relevant anymore. Don't you see this happening? And I feel like when parents and teachers can start asking the bigger pictures, like, what is the goal? Does this really matter? Is this even my belief, or is this just something I've been taken on? Because we've all been told this for so long. I know this in my own parenting. It's allowed me to be like, just much more relaxed. Like, I know what matters and what doesn't, and that getting curious and what's my kid interested in, and giving them permission to be like, so maybe you're dyslexic and spelling is really hard for you. And you know what? You have great creative ideas. I don't care about your spelling tests. Let's get those creative ideas out on paper and let's find ways to build confidence in the things that you're good at. And I hear you saying that so much and I just love it.
Oh, I actually love that last example you gave. And I want to give a quick personal story. You know, the way that I was taught how to write and the way that I was, you know, taught how to teach kids how to write was the very traditional way, right? It's like focusing on, again, the grammar, the mechanic, the spelling test, and this and that. And I hated writing growing up all my life. And I hated teaching writing. And I would notice a very similar attitude in most of my students. They loved creative writing on Fridays when they just got to open their journal and write about whatever. And I wouldn't check their spelling. And I would, but they did not like the actual writing course. And so it's funny because I ended up, now that this is what I do for a living now. I write and yes, I ended up even writing a book. Who would have told? And you know what happened? When I left the traditional school system, I actually enrolled in this writing class online that helped me unlearn all these things that I've been told for years about writing and how we have to do it and focusing on all those rules and the mechanics and the grammar and this and that. And when you remove all those, you know, rules and everything from the equation and you focus on the things that kids are already excited about, which is the ideas, and that's the most important part about writing, right? And you focus on that and you let them elaborate. That's what I did. I focused on my ideas. And then eventually the computer would catch on the grammar. You know, English is my third language. So of course, sometimes, you know, things wouldn't sound right. Or, you know, after reading it a few times after this, like I would start switching things around, but I would already dump all my ideas in paper. They were already there. I would start from abundance instead of from scarcity, which is the way that we've been taught how to write. Like you sit in front of a blank piece of paper and here's the prompt. What if I'm not interested in that prompt? If you're not interested, you're not going to generate good ideas, right? Yeah. And so I started to realize that choice is the most important element about writing and about really pretty much everything, right? In teaching and learning, choice, like giving kids the ability to make decisions over what they want to write about. Who are they writing this for? It cannot be for your teacher's cabinet to put into a file for mm-hmm. your report card. It cannot be just for the fridge for your parents No, they want for their ideas to go places, right? It needs to be, and it goes back to this idea of not only giving them choice, but highlighting the relevance of what we're asking them to do, right? So if we want kids to learn anything, one, they need to be curious about it, and two, they need to understand why they're learning this. And it goes back to what you were saying, like, what's the purpose of this? I would often get this question from students. Why am I learning this? Why am I doing this? And I would so many times be frustrated because I'm like, I have no idea. I don't know why I'm teaching you this. I've still haven't used it. I'm an adult and I don't know when I'm going to use this. So we keep teaching kids just in case. And that's not enough for things to be exciting and for things to stick. And so going back to writing, when you focus on the things that really matter and the things that kids are already excited about, and then you trust that the rest will come into place once they need it, right? If they realize that they love writing because they get to focus on the ideas and then they want to write a book, well, they can't write a book full of, you know, spelling mistakes and this and that. So they're not going to be interested in finding a way to correct that and to do that. And that's when spelling comes really useful, but it's not for this, like, you know, spelling test at the end of the week that just gets graded and words are out of context. No, we need context. We need relevance and kids need choice. And so when I realized that, everything changed for me. And I was like, wow, imagine if I had taught writing like this in school, how many of my kids would become probably writers or would love the practice of writing, which, by the way, even if you don't want to be a writer, the act of writing is such a powerful tool for anybody, right? To organize your thoughts, to become more eloquent, to be able to then talk about ideas, you know, better. And so it just really made me realize how we need to rethink the way that we are, you know, the methods and the practices that we're using and how much choice and ownership and autonomy we're giving kids. And if we're focusing on the right things, right? And if we're not, then it's time to pivot and it's time to make some changes.
100%. And I hear you saying, like, it's this flip-flop. It's like, if we can allow kids to feel invested and excited and engaged in something that's meaningful and interesting to them, then those skills that maybe aren't as interesting are going to come, but they're going to be easier to do because we're already invested and we care about what we're writing about. I mean, like you, I'm actually dyslexic and have ADHD and I'm a writer now, but it's because I don't care if I just get all my stuff out and it doesn't look pretty. I know I've got Grammarly and all the tools I need to later clean it all up for me, you know, but I recognize that I have unique creative ideas. But when you're a child and you're in a system where the gateway to those ideas are maybe something that's really hard and uninteresting and boring, we're really limiting opportunities for kids to experience success and even maybe engage in things that potentially could be of high interest to them, but it's not presented in a way that is accessible, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And you know, now that you mentioned, you know, the ADHD, and this is a topic that it's very controversial. You know, I was also diagnosed with ADHD and was on medicine for so many years. And then I realized, you know, as an adult, after a long process of trying to get off this medicine, which I'm sure you know, highly addictive, but I was finally able to do it as an adult. And I realized, I don't think I have ADHD. I think that I have a lot of energy that was not channeled correctly as a kid. I think that, you know, I was not in the right environment. And then when I started to think about that and reflect on my own experience with this disorder, I realized, oh my God, all these kids that I had in my classroom that were constantly diagnosed with ADHD, like, why is that? And I started to look at the data and how, you know, how it's the amount of kids diagnosed is just, you know, it's off the charts nowadays. If you think about it, what do we know about kids and how they develop? We know that kids need so much movement. They need to be moving until they're exhausted. That's how their brains kick into gear. That's how they're ready to learn. That's how their bodies develop, right? Like they need that. And if you look at what we're doing in traditional setting environments, we're putting them since, you know, 7 a.m. in the morning until 3 p.m. sitting down. We don't allow them to move. We don't allow them to fidget. They get in trouble. We know they're either the troublemakers or we label them with ADHD if they're, you know, fidgeting. When in reality, those are all symptoms. They're telling us that they're not in the right environment. They need to be releasing way more energy than just, you know, 20-minute recess and an hour of physical education, if anything, a day. Like, no, they should be spending the majority of their time moving. And so if you look at, you know, alternative schools, many of them, like in Finland, they don't have desks. Like kids are up and down and moving and on the floor and jumping and walking. Like, for example, I realized my way of writing and generating ideas is not sitting down. If I sit down and open a computer, I'm not going to come up with anything creative. I need to go on a walk and grab my phone. And now there are apps like Otter where you can talk to your phone about your ideas and it will transcribe everything. And then I'll get home with a whole like first draft of ideas because I need to be in constant movement when I am being creative and when I want to write. And so I am convinced that so many of my students were probably the same or a variation of that. So, I'm very frustrated because I feel like a lot of these kids are being mislabeled with ADHD and they probably don't have ADHD, but you know, it's because of the environment that we're putting them on that doesn't fit with them that, you know, suddenly they get mislabeled or we're accentuating the problem because again, and these kids that have ADHD, they need to be moving. They need to be going up and down and this and that. And, you know, by putting them in this restrictive environments where they're not allowed to talk, they're not allowed to move, they get in trouble. We make them feel bad for all these things. It's like, well, the problem's obviously going to get worse, right? Yeah. And so
there's no choice. There's no autonomy. You can't choose what you're interested in. I mean, it's just like, of course. Mm-hmm.
Yep. And so, and again, I know that there's schools that are doing modifications and that they have this movement breaks and they have like this, you know, all these things, but I still feel like it's not enough. I think that we need to sort of rethink the way that we are grouping kids and trying to get them to learn. Like, you know, have you seen forest schools? I think that concept is genius, right? You have kids outdoors moving and playing and learning from nature. And yes, you have times where you sit down and you talk about this and you read books and you learn math, but they're outdoors doing what kids are supposed to be doing, which is moving until they're exhausted. And so I just feel like if we were a bit more open-minded and we actually got to the root of the problem, instead of trying to fit these kids into the mold, create a different system, create a different, you know, and see where kids fit best. And so I think every kid would benefit from that, not just, you know, neurodiverse kids, for example.
100%. And because I think everything that you're saying in your book and today is beneficial for everyone, but there's certain neurowirings where their experience is really not going to be aligned with our traditional system where you have to sit all day, you don't get much movement, you don't get much choice, you don't get to pick what you're interested in, you don't get time outside. And so their symptoms look like ADHD, right? And I talk about this a lot, that I have a lot of issue with our deficit language, calling kids disordered or disabled or having, you know, it's in the attention deficit disorder. It's got two negatives in the title, and we're telling people, here's what you have, rather than looking at the strengths that exist in this neurowiring. And maybe the environments we're finding ourselves in are making us feel disabled. You know, I think that's the shift. It's like, is the environment conducive for learning and the way that you think and the way that you thrive? And maybe that's where the attention needs to go, and less on fixing people to fit into an environment when we really question it isn't working for anyone. You know?
I absolutely love that. Imagine if the message that I had gotten as a child, because what I would get from parents, from teachers, and from doctors was, you're disruptive, you're impulsive, you talk too much, you have too much energy. And everything was like, that's bad, that's bad, that's bad. You need to be less like that. If you take this medicine, like, you know, all you're going to be calm, you're going to let people talk, you're not going to be disruptive, you're not going to do anything crazy. When in reality, when I realize as an adult, I'm like, oh my God, all these things that I was told for so many years that were, you know, negative and wrong with me are actually my strengths. Like I was able to channel all that excessive energy that I have, yes, and that passion and zest for life that may look disruptive in a traditional setting environment for what I do now. Like I love talking to people. I love expressing these things. All my creative ideas, I get to write about them. I get to talk for hours on podcasts. Like all these things that I was told that were wrong with me are actually my strengths. Imagine if that's the message that I would have gotten as a kid over and over again, you know? And I feel like I was able to sort of like escape from it, right? And sort of, but there was a lot of introspection, and I got a lot of help from people around me when I was trying to, you know, get out of this. But I feel like so many kids never get that opportunity, and they just grow up believing that, again, there's something wrong with them, that this and that. When if you actually look at a lot of the people, you know, entrepreneurs and people that have, you know, created incredible things for humanity, they were all labeled ADHD. And so there's obviously something really powerful to these people. And so it's a matter of focusing on that instead of like trying to remediate them and try to fit them into a system where they clearly don't thrive in. And so I love that you shared. I love that.
Yeah. And I noticed in your book, so many of the examples you shared of successful innovators and contributors, you know, Elon Musk and who else did you say?
I mentioned Oprah Winfrey or like all
Bill Gates, Steve Jobs, like all these people who've made significant contributions are actually neurodivergent, because what you're saying, the strengths that we squelch in school and slap labels on people as defective are actually attributes of their neurowiring that are gifts that when fostered are amazing. And look at you, you're a perfect example of that, you know? So I think it's this real mindset shift around, you know, how do we frame these things? Are these things actually flaws, or are they actually talents that in the right environment can potentially be significant contributions to all of us? So let's look at this differently.
And I think that it starts with, again, parents, because teachers, unfortunately, like have so many things on their plate that they don't have sometimes the opportunity to actually be like, okay, this is what I'm going to, but you as a parent can say, okay, my kid is different. They're not, you know, really finding their strengths in school. It is my job at home to make sure that they don't, you know, to build their confidence that's been squashed in school and make them realize all the things that they're actually amazing at, and finding, again, the resources, the space, the environment, and the peers that are going to let them take those strengths into productive interests and take them very far. And I think that that's the job of parents. And for that, we can't believe everything we hear from the traditional school environment.
Absolutely. Yeah. Because if a child is receiving, you know, a poor grade on an exam, and when they come home, it's reframed, like, it's okay. You know, that doesn't really measure the way your intelligence or the way you think, and you're so good at these things, and let's go do these things you're really great at, and you're providing those opportunities. A child can balance out, right? Like, they can filter out some of the messaging and maybe find, oh yeah, I am good at these things. And I'm not going to put so much weight on the grades, which are a whole nother conversation that I think sort of is an issue. I don't know how you feel about it, but with, you know, supporting kids and taking risks and being creative and putting themselves out there, because there's a bit of a fear around failing, basically.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. There's this quote that I have in my book that I love, that it's some principal said it. Unfortunately, it's anonymous, so I can't attribute it specifically, but it says, among the students who will be sitting for the exams is an artist who doesn't need to understand math. There's an entrepreneur who doesn't care about history or English literature. There's a musician whose chemistry marks won't matter. And, you know, that quote just really resonated with me, because it goes along everything we've been talking about. And I think that, you know, more parents need to sort of hear this and hopefully it would help them realize, like, yes, you know, maybe that's my kid. So I'm going to stop sort of like doubling down on those things that maybe don't matter as much, and then double down on the things that actually do.
Right. Absolutely. I love that quote too. And it's like, in the real world, we don't have to be good at everything. Mm-hmm. You know, we are able to double down on those things that we're strong in and we're interested in. And that's kind of how it's supposed to be. We all have these unique gifts and these unique ways we're ultimately supposed to contribute. So what if we gave more space and airtime to that, and allowed children to feel good about themselves because they're investing deeply in what they're good at and they care about? I just think that would shift so much of how people feel about themselves in the world, and then ultimately how they contribute.
Absolutely. I agree.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So for the parents who cannot pull their kids out of school, who are dissatisfied with the system, who ultimately feel that it's not working for their family. I hear you saying that getting curious about the kid in front of you and really giving space and time to their strengths, their interests, giving them flexibility. Would you say that's the foundation moving forward, the big takeaways that parents can apply to their lives when they find themselves in this position?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that also giving kids sort of a sampling period to try different things outside of school and giving them the opportunity to quit the ones that don't feel right so that they, you know, they want to continue trying things until they find something. Because again, sometimes they're not getting opportunities to try different things in school. So they don't really know, because some parents are like, well, Anna, but my kid doesn't know what they're good at. And I don't really know what they're good at. Every kid is good at something, but sometimes they don't have the opportunity to get a taste of that in school. So giving them sort of an opportunity to try to a range of different activities or different things, or taking them to different places until you sort of see what's that thing that awes them, right? That they're like, oh. And even if you're like, well, I don't know where they would take this. Like, my kid is obsessed with, you know, video games. Like, what are they going to do with that in the real world? I'm like, well, you know, the video game industry is a multi-billion-dollar industry that has so many different, you know, jobs that they could potentially have. So that's what they're obsessed with. I'm not saying that they need to be playing the majority of their time. I'm just saying, like, you know, if that's their productive interest, then go ahead and nurture that. And that's okay. And so, just sort of being open-minded and helping them find what that thing is.
Absolutely. And as you mentioned gaming, that was another section of your book I found really fascinating, because I think so many of us have this negative association with gaming, and you really put this in a reframe on the positive attributes of gaming and how there's a reason children are so enticed and engaged, and maybe there's something they're receiving online that might be missing in the classroom. Can you speak a bit to what that piece might be?
Yeah, absolutely. So it is surprising for people when I talk about this, especially because I've never been a gamer myself. I've just never been really that interested in it until I became a teacher. And I started to notice first the amount of kids nowadays that play video games. And I was like, okay, let me approach this with curiosity instead of judgment, you know, instead of being judgmental. What is it about video games that they're so drawn to? Like, why is it that I'm having such a hard time getting them engaged in my lessons that I stay until 8 p.m. trying to make super fun and this and that, but then they play this video game and they can play for hours, yeah, right? Or what is it about video games that they can fail over and over and over again, and they don't get discouraged? They're like, okay, let me try again. Or they get frustrated, but they keep going until they pass to the next level. I was like, wow, there's something really powerful about this. Like, they're like the ultimate learning machines, right? Because kids will stick to things until they get them. We don't see that in school. So what is it about? I became really curious, like, what is it about video games and video game designers that we as educators and parents can learn and bring into, you know, the learning environment? And it turns out that there's just so much. And I just started to like scratch the surface in this book, right? But one of the things that I discovered as I was doing this research was that humans need three things in order to be healthy and happy in the real world, right? We need to feel autonomy, which we've talked about. We need to feel competence. We need to feel like we're good at something and we can improve at things. And we need to feel like we connect with other individuals. So that's relatedness, right? And so what happens in a lot of these traditional environments is that kids, many kids are not getting to experience either one, two, or these three things. And just like our bodies need carbs and fats and protein in order to be healthy and not break down, well, our psyches need to feel these three elements that I just talked about: autonomy, competency, and relatedness. So if you look at, you know, let's start with autonomy, the life of a student in a traditional environment, they rarely get a chance to make choices. Everything is chosen for them, from, you know, what they wear to school with the uniforms and, you know, in the notebook, what side of the notebook you can write, what pen you can use, where you sit, who you can talk to, who do you work with. So who you can talk to and all these things, they're all planned and already chosen for them. You know, what they're going to learn, how they're going to learn them, these things, how they're going to showcase the things that they're learning. So basically they have no opportunities to make choices for themselves. And I have this quote in my book that's very alarming that says that, you know, kids nowadays have twice as many restrictions as incarcerated felons, which is just like, how did we get here? Like, yeah. That's just mind blowing, right? And so suddenly they go home and they get to go online and they get to choose, you know, what games they play, how long they play. Well, not always, but you know, what characters they want to do. So how are they going to dress their characters? You know, what levels they want to play and who they want to play with and all these things. So they suddenly have an opportunity to make all these choices that they don't have in school or during the majority of their day, right? So no wonder they're going to be drawn to these devices. Then we go on to the competency, and we've talked a lot about today how many kids don't get to experience feeling good at anything in school or getting better at anything in school, right? Because either they're already behind from previous grades and they never get to catch up. So they're always in the low group or in the support group, or they don't really get the content and everything moves so quickly because we have to move on to the next unit and this and that. And we never live time for things to sit and marinate. And even the smartest kids need this, right? So a lot of the kids go home and they're like, they don't feel competent. They don't feel like they're good at anything. And so again, our bodies need this. Our psyches need to feel competent. So they go home and they're playing these video games where they don't get penalized for failing. I mean, they do, but they get to try again as many times as they want, right? And so they get to keep going, learning from their mistakes until they finally achieve whatever it is that they want to do. And so they're feeling this sense of, oh my God, I'm really good at this. If I keep going, I get to improve at this. So again, they're getting this need fulfilled that they're not getting in the real world. And then the related net component, right? A lot of kids go to these schools where they're grouped by age with kids that are all their age, which I always talk about this, but I'm always like, you know, when in the real world do you only interact with people your age? Yeah. Only in a school setting, right? That's not how the real world works, right? And a lot of these kids are more mature than their classmates, or, you know, maybe more immature, or they just don't connect with the 24 peers that they're stuck with for a whole years, sometimes like for 12 years, right? And so suddenly online, they get to interact with kids from all over the world, kids that are older, kids that are younger, maybe all other adults, and they get to sort of connect with people that have more similar interests or that, you know, that are more like-minded and less conventionally minded. And so no wonder they're drawn to these spaces, right? And so that was one of the first things that I was like, wow, this is fascinating. So if more parents understood this, maybe they would approach the game time. And I'm not saying that it's not a concern. And I'm not saying that kids should be playing for hours and hours and hours. No. And I actually talk about the data in the book of how much is too much, how much is fine, according to all the research. And so if parents understood this, then they can, you know, the first step is approaching this with, okay, let me find out what my kid is missing in the real world that I can, you know, that they're getting online. And how can I bridge that gap? What can I find in the real world that fulfills? Is it the competency component? Is it the relatedness? Is it the, you know, the autonomy? They're not getting enough choices. And these are all fixable things that the moment you realize as a parent, you can do something about it. And so that was fascinating to me. And then the other component that I touched a little bit upon was, yeah, this whole idea of, you know, one of the goals of education should be to become self-directed learners. That means you need to know how to learn on your own, right? And I feel like everything in school is so scripted. You know, kids are used to waiting for an adult that knows more than they do to tell them what to think, what to do, what to learn, what to this. So we're constantly like depending on someone, right? When in reality, we should be stepping back and giving them the tools and teaching them how to teach themselves. And I've realized that video games do this, right? Kids learn how to pick up on skills on their own. And I think that that's such a powerful thing. Now, the problem is that this does translate to the real world, but it doesn't unless there's a whole reflection piece. And oftentimes kids are just playing and they don't make room for like mindful reflection, right? That's what parents or educators come in. Yeah. You sit down with your son or your daughter and you're like, okay, tell me about your gaming. Or you sit down and you watch them play and you sort of show interest, even if you're not interested. You pretend like you're interested and you start asking questions that help them reflect on these things that they're automatically learning. And again, if they're just learning about it and they don't talk about it or reflect about it, then it kind of, you know, they're not going to do anything with that. But again, there's so many things that translate to the real world, this critical thinking, the problem solving, like so many things. And so if you help them realize these things and bring them to consciousness, and then you're like, okay, how could you actually apply? That's so cool that you learned that. How could you apply that in the real world? Oh my gosh, let's try this next time when we're in dinner, you can do this and this. And so you help them, all these things that they're learning, which I would argue they're learning a lot when they're playing video games, you can actually translate them to the real world with your help. And so these are just like little things that I started to notice that I was like, this is fascinating. And then I became really interested in, okay, how can we as parents help them find that balance so that they know, because kids need a lot of help from parents and from adults in order to navigate this, you know, digital world that, you know, it's coming no matter what we want, even if we hate it, even if we hate screens, they're here and they're here to stay. And they're only going to become a bigger part of our lives. Like, unfortunately, that's the reality. So what do you do about it? Yeah. Well, the first thing is you befriend them, right? So many parents are like, annoyed at the fact that their kids are spending so much time online. And I understand that, of course, I'm a parent myself, right? But if you are upset at this and you make it the enemy, then your kids are not going to trust you and they're not going to want to talk to you about it. And they're going to hide it from you and they're going to do it anyway. And remember, you need to be their ally here and you want to help them here. And so if you, again, approach it with curiosity and see how you can get involved and how you can help them set limits for themselves, and you can do this together, then it becomes an open conversation and it becomes a lot easier to help them, set these boundaries for themselves. Because the whole point of everything, right, we do in school and we do at home as parents, as educators, is once we're not there, we want for our kids to be able to do them themselves, yeah. Right? And in order to do this, we need to teach them and we need to walk them through these things, right? And so there's just a lot that we could cover in this topic.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm writing notes around and there's like, okay, I've got so many things I want to respond about this. But what I ultimately hear you saying, it's like this intentionality too. And it comes back to the original thing we talked about at the beginning about why are we doing what we're doing? Just like, what is the goal of school? Why are we playing the video game? And getting curious, are we playing it because we're genuinely interested in this thing that's benefiting us? Or are we using it as a tool to maybe distract ourselves or, you know, and differentiating between the why behind it and then moving from that place and setting the boundaries and getting curious. And rather than reacting to it as a negative, honoring what it's doing well and looking for what are the pieces about it that are working and how can we apply that maybe to other areas? That's what I love so much about the work that you do is you're so curious to like, okay, let's not just immediately reject something. Let's look at why are people so fascinated by this? Why mm-hmm. are children addicted to this? Why are they okay with failing and trying again? And what is the component there that we mm-hmm. can apply over here and bring into their academic world, into other areas of their lives? And so I just appreciate you so much and the conversation that you bring. It's so cutting edge, forward thinking, and just encouraging people to get curious, which it sounds so simple, but it's really an action, right? Getting curious and deciding to look at things in a new way. And rather than immediately reacting, we're actually allowing a different way to exist. And I feel like the work that you're doing and this book that you brought to the world really gives parents permission and teachers to look at things differently, look at things in a new way and look at things equitably, you know, mm-hmm. and how can we create more of what's working for more people to benefit us individually and as a collective. And so mm-hmm. I'm so thankful you came on here today, Anna, and shared your wisdom. I know you have some offers available for people that might be a bit supportive for people, parents who are in a position who need some help. And also, of course, how do people get access to your amazing book? Because there's so much more in here. I could talk to you all day. There's so many things in this book that I just feel like everyone needs to have it. So let us know how they get it.
Yeah. So I'm part of this startup called Synthesis, which touches upon and teaches kids the things that we argue that they're not learning in the traditional school system that we talked about today. All the soft skills of collaboration and learning how to fail constructively and making decisions and understanding trade-offs and all these things that they're going to need in the real world, they get to learn through this fun simulations where it's all online and they get to play with kids from all over the world, different ages. And it's really fun. And this year we added a second component because just like we're targeting the soft skills, we also want to target the hardcore academics. So we came out with this digital tutor, which is amazing. You need to try it in order to sort of understand the grasp of it. But basically we grabbed all the most incredible things from, we started with math. That's the first topic that we have right now, the first subject. And we grabbed the best teacher that we considered in math, Dr. James Tanton, PhD from Princeton. So not only is he an expert in the subject, but he's also a phenomenal educator, two different things. He understands the art of teaching. And so we captured, after recording him for hours and hours and hours, all the way he gives feedback, how he talks to kids and the jokes and the stories and all these elements that make it feel very like a human. And we captured it all in this AI tutor that's infinitely patient. It will stay with you until you've mastered the material, which fixes the problem that we talked about today of all these kids, you know, falling behind and then not being able to catch up because the next thing comes up and the teacher doesn't have time to sit with every student until they grasp everything. So finally, we have, you know, this tutor that will stay with you in a fun way, in a way that's logical, where kids get to see the practical application of what they're learning in math right away. And there are no extrinsic things that, you know, they're learning just for the, like the characters or this and that. We have nothing of that. It's just they love it because they finally get to understand math. And it sounds, you know, cliche, but it really is the way it's working. And so today we're offering a special offer, which you can talk about, Melissa, for the people that are listening to this podcast. And then when it comes to my book, you can find it anywhere where you buy books online, on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Thrift Books, or in bookstores around the US. And if you want to follow my content, I send a newsletter on Fridays called Fab Friday. And you can find me on Twitter or X at AnnaFabrega11 or Instagram, MissFab_LearningLab. And yeah.
Amazing. So many great things. Okay. And for listeners, if you want to take advantage of Anna's offer for monthly, annual, or lifetime tutoring plans through Synthesis, you can use our code NEURODIVERSITY for 10% off, and we'll link that in the show notes for easy access to everyone. Thank you so much, Anna. This was such a pleasure, and I look forward to hearing more from you as the years continue. I feel like you just have such a gift for bringing this new way of thinking to the world, so thank you.
Thank you so much, Melissa, for having me. Likewise, and I really enjoyed our conversation.
Thank you. Thank you so much for joining me. If you liked this podcast, please be sure to rate, subscribe, and share it with a friend who might need it. And if you're curious to discover where you're at in your nervous system and would like tools to support yourself in whatever state you're in so you can create more safety in your body to feel more grounded and connected to yourself, I've created a free quiz that allows you to discover your current state right now and receive a practice with your results for immediate support. Check out the show notes to grab it. Can't wait to chat with you next time.